First, chronic traumatic encephalopathy, or CTE, was first identified nearly 100 years ago, but it's just in the last couple of decades that research has shown a potentially high risk of the condition for people who participate in contact sports like boxing and football. Much of the research that brought this issue to the public attention was done by Dr. Bennett Omalu, the CTE researcher whose work was the subject of the 2015 movie Concussion. Now, new research has been published by a team led by Dr. Omalu that shows that CTE could potentially be diagnosed in living patients. In this case, the patient was Fred McNeil, a former linebacker for the Minnesota Vikings who died in 2015. The diagnosis was confirmed by an autopsy performed after his death. But our next guest says we're still a long way from a reliable method of detecting this condition. Dr. Michael McCray is a professor of neurosurgery, vice chair of research, and director of brain injury research at the Medical College of Wisconsin. Dr. McCray, welcome back to Central Time.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Before we get into this new research, remind us a little bit of what CTE is and what it does to a brain.
So CTE stands for chronic traumatic encephalopathy. It's had a number of labels over the past 100 years or so. I guess most notably it was referred to as dementia pugilistica, a syndrome that was discovered in boxers back in the 1920s. We knew a fair amount about it in boxers through the 1900s, and then more recently there's been a great deal of discussion about an increasing number of autopsy studies in retired or former athletes outside of boxing that have shown evidence of pathological evidence of CTE. It's a neurodegenerative process in select areas of the brain that are oftentimes attributable to the accumulation of a tau protein, which is really a destructive protein that in excess causes this neurodegeneration. And in many cases, there's also some contribution of what we refer to as amyloid. Amyloid is the protein that's most often implicated in Alzheimer's disease, and there are a whole assortment of other neurodegenerative diseases or dementias that are associated with tauopathies, or this deposition of tau, as I referred to it a second ago.
And you mentioned that autopsy, and that's been part of the problem, right? That's been the only way we could concretely diagnose CTE is after someone's already dead. Is that right?
That's correct. So CTE is a pathological diagnosis, meaning it's based on brain pathology at autopsy. Just like many brain disorders were in their initial advent or discovery, eventually then diagnostic tools are developed to more effectively, but not definitively, diagnose the condition in living people. As an example, for instance, Alzheimer's disease is a pathological syndrome. It is diagnosed in living people based on observed clinical characteristics and criteria, but definitively is only diagnosed at autopsy. And the same could be said for CTE, although we lag far behind, obviously, Alzheimer's disease in understanding what, in fact, are the unique clinical characteristics of this disease itself.
And that takes us to this new research. Researchers saying, anyway, that they've done this scan, they can spot some of those proteins you're talking about. Tell us, first of all, what they presented in this study.
So I was not involved in this study, but basically for your listeners, this is a case of a former NFL football player who was involved in a study a number of years ago where they utilized advanced imaging technologies, positron emission tomography, or what's commonly referred to as PET studies, where they can look at uptake of various ligands in brain tissue and make a better determination as to how those ligands bind to tau or to amyloid, and make interpretations then about the presence of tau or amyloid in the brain. And this gentleman then lived a number of years, and I don't know when exactly he died, but was recently then submitted to autopsy, and in fact, there's pathological evidence of findings consistent with CTE.
So we did this scan, we saw what we thought was evidence of CTE, but we couldn't confirm it until an autopsy, and now, again, researchers are saying, yes, we have confirmed what we initially thought. Is that right?
That's correct, yes.
We're talking to Dr. Michael McCrae about CTE, this brain condition, and research on trying to spot it when someone is still alive. Now, here's the big question, and I think there's some controversy about this. Does this mean we now have a scan that can detect pathological signs of CTE while someone is still alive?
No, it does not. And you're right. There is a great deal of controversy. This is a start. This is a single case, but most of the scientific community in Alzheimer's disease will tell you, for instance, that we've had a number of breakthroughs. What were thought to be really groundbreaking developments in diagnostic studies for Alzheimer's disease that then eventually did not pan out. Developing any kind of a diagnostic test, obviously we're first and foremost interested in maximizing what we call sensitivity. That what is the slightest signal of this disease that our device is able to detect. And do it as early as possible and in the mildest form, right? So that we're chasing maximum sensitivity of a diagnostic test, whatever that might be, a blood test, an imaging tool, or otherwise. But the other side of the equation is what we call specificity, meaning that signal that I find, is it in fact specific to disease entity A, or is this signal something that I find very sensitively in mild form, but then in the end I discover that it's evident across a whole host of disorders, diseases, or conditions even in normal people? And in most cases where diagnostic studies struggle or eventually fail is on the specificity side. In fact, they turn out not to be a unique marker for a single disease, but they're prevalent across a whole host of conditions, or in normal living people without disease at all, and they prove not to be very accurate diagnostically. It remains to be seen how this tool will play out in future studies.
Right. You mentioned some of the same proteins we might see in CTE are ones that might be associated with something like Alzheimer's. So even if we can detect them, we don't know if this is a condition related to repeated head injury or something completely unrelated.
That is correct. And just within the category of what I mentioned, tauopathies or brain diseases that are known to be caused by excessive tau deposition, there's somewhere in the order of 50 tauopathies. And there are scientists around the world who dedicate their laboratories to the study of these tauopathies. And even those are difficult to differentiate diagnostically.
Even if we could reliably detect CTE, and it sounds like that would be a long way off, do we know anything about treatment if we do know that somebody has this while they're still alive?
We know little or nothing about treatment to this point. And I'll add this to complicate matters even further, but at a much more foundational level, we know very little about the incidence of this disease entity, CTE, in retired or former athletes or in the general population. So there's a lot of debate out there as to this association between exposure to prior concussion or repetitive head impacts in sports or other activities and the eventual risk of CTE. One thing is for certain, and I'd be remiss if I didn't make this comment. Really, is that there have been media stories in the last several months, most famously over the summer, where a research publication was presented in the lay press, indicating that 110 out of 111 brains of former NFL players were found to be CTE positive on autopsy. And my concern there is that people like you and I, who are the parents of young kids who are active in all sorts of, athletic activities and athletes themselves, for instance, they are at great likelihood of jumping to the conclusion that, for instance, there's a 99% chance of getting CTE, which is just, in my mind, highly irresponsible and reckless. So I think we need to bring some context to this discussion. And the burning questions scientifically really are, what are the true population-based risks? You know, there was a study, for instance, published at the same time this summer indicating that former high school football players right here in the state of Wisconsin were, in fact, at no greater risk of cognitive decline or late-life neurodegenerative disease compared to their counterparts who did not play high school football. So we need to understand what are the true population-based risks of CTE or late-life neurologic health problems in athletes or non-athletes. And for me, the burning question is, in that small group, that very small percentage of individuals that may be affected, why them? Why is it that an individual is at heightened risk of late-life neurologic health problems when there are literally thousands of individuals that have similar histories who go on to lead completely normal and healthy lifestyles for, you know, a normal life duration?
We'll leave it there for now. Dr. McRae, thanks a lot for joining us today.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Dr. Michael McRae is a professor of neurosurgery, vice chair of research, and director of brain injury research at the Medical College of Wisconsin. He was with us to explain the significance of a medical paper on the diagnosis of CTE in a living patient.